Welcome to Take Note on WPSU. I'm Patty Satalia. Today's program with author Stacy Lee was recorded live at the Nittany Lion Inn back in March. Lee's visit was sponsored by Center County Reads. The chosen book for this year's event was Lee's debut novel, Under a Painted Sky, a historical fiction written for young adults. Lee spoke with WPSU's Eleanor Klibanoff.
Okay, well, first of all, thank you so much for joining us today.
Oh, thank you for having me. It's wonderful to be here, and thank you for reading my book.
Yeah, could we get another round of applause for the book? It was so great, right? So great. You've got this amazing story of two girls, a Chinese girl in Independence, Missouri, a slave on the run, who go on the run as boys. Where did the idea for this story come from?
I had always wondered what life would have been like for someone, a girl living at that time. My mother's people came in the late 19th century, and because of the Chinese exclusion law, she wasn't there. Her people were not allowed to stay permanently. So there was a lot of back and forth. And as far as my dad, he came here in the 40s, during World War II, I guess. And he was one of the paper sons allowed to immigrate after the 1906 earthquake. I don't know, but in the 1906 earthquake in San Francisco, that burned all the records, the birth and immigration records for Chinese people at the time. And Chinese people were not allowed to come because of the Exclusion Act. So this was sort of like a silver lining for Chinese people. All of a sudden, they were allowed to claim that they were citizens and that they were entitled to bring family from China. So my dad was one of those paper sons who came over that way. And so this family history really called to me. And when I sat down to write the book, it was this character who walked into my head who said, write about me. I have a story to be told. And so it started from there.
So how much of your family history were you sort of incorporating into this story?
Well, we don't know too much about my relatives just because there was no paper history of them. And there was also a language barrier in that. I'm fourth generation, and I don't speak Chinese. My mother doesn't speak Chinese or read it. She understands a lot. But, you know, any sort of records were lost along the way, and the fire or other paper was just hard to keep track of, I think, and all the moving. So anything we had was more oral history, and because of the language barrier, a lot of that was lost as well. So I really did have to do a lot of imagining and a lot of just looking through the different stories of the immigrants that I'd read about Chinese people coming over and talking to relatives and their friends and cobbling these ideas together. I needed a heroine who spoke English. And so that's how Sammy's story started developing. And she's sort of not typical of a Chinese person in that time. A typical Chinese person in 1849 would have been a male and would have been probably someone coming during the gold rush to California. And they were here to find gold and to bring it back to their countries. They weren't here to stay. So that would have been the typical person. There were few women. But I wanted to write about a girl because I understand that perspective, and I think that there were just not enough Chinese girl stories told in this period of time.
There's a lot of other voices and stories also incorporated in here. It's not just the story of this one Chinese girl. You've got
right.
a runaway slave.
Right.
Why did you sort of decide to incorporate these other historical narratives that were happening at the same time?
I think when I started doing the research into the 19th century and this period of time, I started realizing how much there was going on in the mid-1800s. There's the gold rush, there was the westward expansion, there was the issue of slavery, and the rise of the cowboy. So all these disparate elements sort of found their way into the book. Just because that's what I was researching when I sat down to in the library and doing the research, all these areas started coming up. And so I thought it sort of made sense that all of these things would be there together. And I needed a cohort for Samantha. I needed someone that she could run away with. And you know, it, one of the challenges of having, of not having a best friend or a, I hate to use the word sidekick because that's not what anime is, but then you don't have someone you can have dialogues with. And so when you take the dialogue away, I think it makes it very difficult for readers to read, especially in the young adult where it, things have to be pacey, things have to move, and dialogue is one of the ways we do that. And so I thought it would be, it's much more natural to have a person with her. So, and I wanted someone who was sort of similar to her in that they're both, you know, they're both orphans, they're both running. But I also wanted to present a contrast in many ways. And so Samantha and Anime, they've grown up very differently. Samantha is sort of a coddled girl in many ways. Anime has led a harder life. Samantha is like this musician. Anime sings. They have that in common. But Samantha is more formally trained. And then, you know, things like they each have bracelets that represent different things to them. So I really liked this idea of contrasts and playing off each other.
Right, mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely see that contrast. It's, you know, Sammy almost comes off very privileged next to mm-hmm. Anime, which,
absolutely, yeah.
You know, she might not if she was alone. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have to ask, I mean, this, the book starts in very quickly with, you know, a gruesome death, a mm-hmm. attempted rape, a murder. Where was the decision, besides the fact that your characters are teenagers, sort of frame this as young adult fiction?
Yeah. I think it comes down to the age of the protagonist. And so I was dealing with a teenager here, and I have been taught that nothing is off limits for teenagers. It's all in how you handle it. So no subject matter is off limits for them, and no issue is too difficult, because that's what teens face every day. They face these issues. And so it's how they handle it. As far as, you know, all the stuff that happens in the first chapter, I think I worked because I wanted it to really pull you in. So I did work using a double punch method. I like to call it that. I grab by the throat and then have the death of the father, and then the attempted rape. So I like to think of it as a double punch. Not all books have to start with such a pacey beginning, but this particular one I felt had to, because she had to have a very compelling reason to leave this comfortable existence and go on the trail. And as a city girl, that would have been very difficult. So,
And I mean, what draws you to these teenage characters, and what makes you sort of want to write for that audience?
You know, I think they often say that young adult writers just have not moved beyond their teen years in many ways, and sometimes I feel like I with the teen issues, you know, the wrestling for independence, the finding friends as family, and forging an identity for yourself that's more based on your friendships. I think that has always sort of appealed to me. There's so much to wrestle out of those issues, and I think it's something that we can all relate to. And I mean, when we think back on our teen years, it's so crisp to us, and we remember those firsts. Remember that scariness of feeling like we're the only one in the world. So I feel like those issues to me are, there's so much to just wrestle with there. I think that's what draws me.
Definitely. And on that subject of friendship, you originally conceived of this as more of a romance story, right? Between West and Sammy. How did it sort of come around to a friendship story, and were you happy with where it ended up?
When I first wrote the book, it was more focused on the romance between West and Sammy. It was pitched as a historical romance. And it had all these disparate elements to it. It had, you know, the Chinese girl on the prairie and the cowboys and a runaway slave. And as such, my agent told me that it would be a very difficult sell just because it wasn't sexy. You know, it wasn't like the commercial hooky kind of high fantasy thing or whatever the market was looking for. And she was right. We pitched it to 26 publishers, And that was pretty much the end of the line. When we got to number 26, I was really sweating it. And but 26 was the lucky number, and Putnam ended up asking, they didn't buy it, they asked for a revision because they wanted it to be more of a friendship book. They envisioned it as a friendship book. And so I really had to think to myself, do I really want to change this book? Because it would have been a major rewrite. And it was. It was a major rewrite. I ended up chopping it in half and rewriting the whole thing. To me, it was worth it because I had spent so much time on this book, and I really believed in Samantha. So I ended up doing that. And then they bought the book. And then the first editorial letter came in, and it said, you know, we really miss the romance with West. Can you put it back in? So that was the second revision. I mean, major revision I did for Penguin, Putnam Penguin, is to put the romance back in after I'd taken it out for them. And I think the final thing, I think, is how it probably should have been written. But it's this version that was published is very different than the one I started with.
Right.
Focused more on the romance.
Yeah, it sounds like a challenge to sort of reimagine that after so much was already there.
And then you end up sort of missing some of the characters you took out and missing some of those scenes that, but somehow it sort of works. It's still in there. You know, I have a document that I start that I put all my cut scenes in with the hopes that one day maybe they'll come back to life somewhere, but it's really just to make myself feel better.
Right. When you think about Westerns and this whole genre, I think of, you know, John Wayne or these sort of single lone men out on the range, and this is not that. This is, you know, a group of people, a very diverse group of people, women, these other stories that you just don't really see. Was it hard to do the research when those stories just weren't always documented?
Certainly, I was forging, because, you know, when you think of a pioneer story, you think of white people on the prairie. You don't think of Asian people on the prairie. But the fact is that there was a lot of diversity on the prairie and a lot of diversity in the U.S., which I don't think gets talked about enough. So, you know, you had Mexico owned a huge chunk of the U.S., and then you had, and so the vaqueros were here. Then you had the slaves, you had African Americans who were here, and many of them did want to go west because it represented freedom to them. And they've, you know, the East Coast did not hold promise for them anymore. There was too many issues. California was a place where they could be free. And then you had cowboys, and you had just so, and the cowboys were such a diverse bunch. I don't think people realize that either. We have this idea of a cowboy being, you know, a good-looking white guy with a cigarette, I guess. But I would say a good 10% were black, and were not glamorous. They were at the very bottom of the totem pole. They spent like hours in the saddle. I think they all had hemorrhoids, is what I was reading. Am I allowed to say that word?
Sure.
Yeah, it just, I really wanted to paint this real picture of what was going on, I think, in the American West. I mean, so for me, these were the untold stories that I wanted to bring to light.
I know you've talked about sort of when you were a child looking for books by Asian authors or about Asian subjects even. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like the publishing industry is sort of changing around that a little bit, that they are more interested in books that reflect the true diversity of what was happening?
I hope so. Especially in historicals, I think. But I know that what I am doing, there's not that many people writing more diverse historicals. Not yet. I mean, for a long time, historicals were pretty synonymous with Regency period and Victorian period. But I think that is changing, and I hope that's changing. As in terms of Asian heroines, I think that is slowly changing. It's hard though, because you have many different, like, you have, you know, you need authors to be writing it, you need publishers to be buying it, you need agents to be representing it, and you need booksellers to be selling it, and librarians, and teachers. So there's all sorts of, there's pieces of the puzzle that all have to work together. And so I think that change is coming. I think it's slow, but it's, you know, there's a lot of pieces, moving pieces.
If you're just joining us, this is Take Note on WPSU. Stacy Lee, author of Under a Painted Sky, spoke with WPSU's Eleanor Klibanoff at the Center County Reads event in March.
And let's talk a little bit about your work with We Need Diverse Books while we're on this subject. So tell us a little bit about how that movement started and your involvement with it.
It's a grassroots movement that started in 2015. The Cooperative Children's Book Center, which is part of the University of Wisconsin, releases a study every year. They count up all the children's books, and they count up how many books have diverse people into it. They tally Chinese person, you know, or whatever. So there's like 3,000 to 5,000 books that they tally every year. It's a major endeavor. And they've been doing it for like the past 30 or 40 years. And they released a study that showed that the number of diverse books stayed at 7.5% for the last 30 years. And it has not changed. And this despite our population just being, you know, continuing to grow in diversity. I think the U.S. population is 40% diverse now, with school children even higher, 50%. So this was pretty startling because you have a huge percentage of the population that just doesn't see themselves in books. And when you don't see yourself in a book, you don't really matter. It means that you can't be the hero. It means that, you know, for a long time, I didn't think that Chinese people were allowed to be in books. I didn't, and because I didn't see them, so I didn't even think it was okay. When I started writing, they were all white people. In my heroines were all white because I thought that's what I was supposed to do, you know. And I didn't even question it until present day. So that study came out, and then the BEA, which is the Book Selling Expo of America, I think that's what it stands for. It's a conference, a book conference that happens every year in New York, and it's a big deal for the booksellers. They released their all-star lineup, and all of the stars were white males. No females. There was one grumpy cat, which is a character in a book.
And this study had found that there's actually more animals.
There's more animals.
There are more animals than diverse characters
there's
in children's
more animals.
Books.
Kind of startling. So anyways, this caused a group of us to think, you know, to say, we need to change this. And because of the beauty of social media, you can do Twitter hashtag campaigns now. And so we did that. And we invited people to make signs as to why we need diverse books. And it went viral. This was kind of showing the need, the great need out there. So then after that, we thought, okay, we need to do more. We can't just stop there. So we incorporated as a nonprofit, and we continue to push and advocate for diverse books. So now I'm the lawyer for the group. Unfortunately, it's not the most glamorous job, but we just got our trademark, and so we have lots of awesome programs though that promote diversity in books from many different angles. There are publishing internships, there are awards, there are grants. We just started the Book Selling Award of the Year, giving an award to booksellers who are proponents for diversity. And then there's the Walter D. Myers Award, which is given every year for a writer of diverse young adult fiction. So there are ways that we can approach this many-headed problem and try to advocate for more diversity in books. But change is slow. I mean, you have people who are in publishing who've been there for a very long time, and it's pretty homogenous still in publishing. And, you know, people naturally will choose to buy the books that they like and they're comfortable with. If we have more diverse publishers, we have more diverse editors, they're going to choose the books that they are comfortable with and that they want to see. So. And I think it's like hugely important because for our kids, you know, not just to learn about other cultures, but to really bust some of the stereotypes we see, and learn, you know, learning about other cultures and fostering this curiosity for the world, I think is important.
So when you were trying to get your first book published, did you run into any resistance or excitement about writing a book that was more diverse than what you're going to typically see for this genre?
I wrote it at a time before diverse books, and I think that's why my agent was like, let's be realistic about this. This is a weird book, and there's a lot of oddities that that publishers are not necessarily going to want to grab. And when we got our rejections, the rejections were never anything, any one thing in particular, which kind of tells you that there's nothing wrong with the writing, per se. It's just that we would get a lot of responses like, well, I didn't fall in love with this book. They had their reasons, but they would never be consistent reasons. And I think it was just a matter of not wanting to take a risk on a book. And that's a very realistic, before, you know, a publisher puts all their money behind a book, they want to make sure that it's going to sell. And so people just didn't think that it would.
And clearly, that did not come true.
Thankfully. Thankfully.
And you've gone on to write two other books as well.
Yeah. This Outrun the Moon was the second book, and that's about the 1906 earthquake, which I mentioned, is dedicated to my parents. My dad still hasn't read it. He doesn't read anything that's not nonfiction, essentially.
Oh. Has he read any of your books?
Well, he read this one because my mom sort of forced him, like, this is embarrassing. You better read this book. So he did, but that's as good as it gets.
Get one book.
That's totally fine. I'm proud that he's proud. And
so Outrun the Moon is another Asian protagonist, yes. And that's set after the 1906 earthquake. And then your third book is not an Asian protagonist.
No, the third book is the book that I was writing while we were waiting for Under a Painted Sky to sell. And it's about a young adult perfumer who has like this extraordinary nose, and she makes love potions with her mother, and things go awry when she gives the wrong love potion to somebody. And she's got to fix her mistake before her mother finds out, which is like the worst thing that could happen, right?
Right.
Your mother finds out. It's loosely based, or was inspired by, my nose. I have this ability to smell musical notes. It's a very strange bit of synesthesia, and I thought it would be interesting to explore a girl who just sees the world through her nose, through her sense of smell.
So what does that mean? I mean, you can smell, when you smell something, it comes across to you as musical notes?
Yeah. Do you know what perfect pitch is? You know what perfect pitch is?
Sure.
You can replicate a melody in your head. So I was a pianist for 20 years. I have perfect pitch. It's a family trait, and I take no credit for it, but that allows me to identify pitches. So when I smell certain things, coffee, I know I can smell what note it is. Oh, that's a high C, or that's a C sharp, or that's a little flat on the E flat, or it's...
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that useful in any way?
It's
no,
not
there's,
useful
you haven't
at
found,
all.
I mean,
it's not useful at all.
Other than writing a book about it. I mean,
yes.
You may have found the one use for that,
exactly.
For that skill.
Exactly. I can write a book from it. Or sometimes my daughter comes up to me and says, what do I smell like today? Or what note do I smell like?
Yeah.
You're still a C sharp. But you know, it's funny because I didn't really discover that I had that. I mean, it was just something I took for granted. Like, can't you smell notes? You know, I was just one of those things. But I was at a perfume shop in Hawaii about 10 years ago. And this perfumer, she had me smell her different creations. It was natural perfumer. So it's natural perfumes, like essential oils from plants. And she had me smell, and I noticed that she had written the notes for the perfume. And I was really curious about that. And I was like, why do you have this cord written here? And she said, I can smell that. And so I smelled it, and I was stunned to realize that she was right, like, and I could smell it too. And so she tested me out, and we sort of, you know, she gave me some things to smell, and I wrote down what the notes were, and she compared it to her notes, and we had identified the same notes. And so it was like this, wow, I didn't even know I could do that. And so
wow.
I just...
So everyone smell. I mean, everyone who has this smells the same notes for the same things.
The same notes, yes.
That's wild. So you said you were writing that book while you were waiting for this to get published.
Yeah.
Had you already written Outrun the Moon as well?
No, okay. No, I
hadn't.
That
came later?
So what happens in publishing is that I had an option for the second look at the second book. And so they looked at Heart Note and they thought, we want another historical from you. And so what are your ideas for the next historical? And so my agent ended up selling Heart Note to a different publisher, HarperCollins, totally different family. And I wrote a second book for Putnam. And what my editor wanted me to do was to create a few ideas it was more of a collaboration than here's a book I wrote, want to publish it.
Okay.
Yeah. So it turns out to be more of a collaboration from here on, because timing wise now, this book Outrun the Moon came out in May, and before the book was even published, they're already moving you on to the next idea. They're like, okay, now what do you have? So there's a timeline that is followed. It becomes more like a job in many ways.
So you're sort of in that mill now.
You're in that mill, yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What do you think, how did you sort of feel like this is the book, I finally have a book that's worth trying to get published, or that's worth, taking that next step with?
I think it was at this point where I had been working as a lawyer for 10 years, and I retired finally, and I started having kids, and my husband knew how much I loved writing, and he had listened to some podcast or some show where it was all about, your mindset, and if you want to do something, you can do it. It's just a matter of mindset. So he was telling me, if you want to publish a book, then you can do it. And if you don't, it's because you didn't want it enough. Mm. And, besides truly annoying me, it really lit this fire in me. And I was like, okay, I'm going to give this a shot. I'm really going to give this a serious shot. And, and so rather than take something that I had been working on, I just started from scratch. And I thought, okay, I'm going to do this. And I happened to have some time during the summer. My parents live in L.A., and I live in the Bay Area, so it's an hour plane ride. And they took my kids for the summer. And wow, that freed up time. I was like, woohoo! And so I started writing, and I really just focused in a way that I couldn't do with two small children. And since then, every summer, they are very kind and they take my kids. They're now in their 80s, and they're so dear to me. They still watch my kids, and it's become really, family bonding time for them, but then writing time for me. So it all seems to work so far. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you think we'll ever see any of those early first drafts come out in another book form? the shelved books, let's say.
Perhaps. Yes. There is one that I'm sort of side eyeing, thinking, okay, that might. I'd have to do major revisions on it, but I really liked the idea, and I think it would be a good follow-on to Heart Note, actually. So, yeah, the other ones, I don't think so. And that would be good for the world, because they were not very good.
That was author Stacy Lee talking to WPSU's Eleanor Klibanoff. Lee is the author of Under a Painted Sky, which is this year's Center County Read selection. To hear more of this interview, including Q&A from the audience, visit wpsu.org/take note. I'm Patty Satalia, WPSU.